Hey there, Brendan.
Ahoy, Alan.
Not a Thing podcast up and running for episode 186. It is it's a great day. I'm not sure how it is in your neck of the woods, but by the recording bunker down here in San Jose, it's been a really, really nice day.
Yeah, the weather is nice.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing we're almost up to the murder episode. I think we might even come with you, episode 187.
I think we can probably work on that theme. Unfortunately, murder is a thing out in the world as much as we would like it not to be. We could probably do that. It would just be sort of a downer. Like a lot of a downer.
We'll find a way to make it good.
Okay.
Not murder. I mean the episode.
Right.
The murder. Only good murder is when you're killing Hitler.
Or maybe
this time next year, Trump. I don't know.
Hopefully not. We'll see though. A lot can happen in a week. A lot has happened since the last time we recorded, which was a week ago. Let's start off in China, where there has been, I guess, in China, they're catching up in to America in terms of the popularity of kind of live video streaming, YouTube and things like that. I guess are not all the way there in China yet, or not super popular, or more localized versions of them are gaining more favor. There's million-dollar businesses starting to kind of crop up around streaming, and people who do live blogging or streaming video blogging. I can't say the word vlog. I think that's not a thing.
That sounds offensive.
But kind of content creators are doing the equivalent of like Vine and Snapchat in China, and popular streamers. There was one who was claiming to make over the equivalent of like $150,000 US per year, which is kind of a lot for just being online and doing stuff. So we should aspire to such greatness.
I don't know if the means are worth the ends.
Right. So there's in kind of gross popular terms, the majority of the more successful streamers are women, and it seems like there's a pretty direct correlation, if not causation, that women who are being kind of seductive on camera get more likes and subscribers and more ad money, or however the dollars are being kind of allocated from the streaming, to the point where it's becoming a moral panic. And it's not a moral panic, or rather it is a moral panic in that it's they're worried that that women are being exploited on camera, but it's going further than that. So rather than having kind of a what I would consider kind of broad, like you have to have certain controls about what you stream or don't stream, they're specifically banning certain activities online. One of which is kind of fantastic, is you can't seductively eat bananas in China on for video streaming purposes. I guess this is this was a thing. This is it was common enough that it made a couple news outlets and was turned into a law, I guess, that you can't eat a banana seductively online, which is at times both kind of hilarious to me and also telling of how like weirdly broken the way you fix this is.
Seductive banana eating, not really a thing.
No.
But banning people from doing certain activities as innocuous as that on the internet, even more not of a thing.
Right. I think the it goes to show the way that it's handled, you know, regulation wise is most likely going to be ineffective, because if you ban bananas today, are you going to ban like what is it? I forgot. Plantains. Plantains.
Oh, yeah, plantains. First they came for the bananas.
And I was silent, right? Yes, I think it.
Or I guess that's the problem, it's coming for the bananas.
Right. Oh. Well done. But yeah, banning specific actions will you're never going to catch that, especially on the internet. I think it's still surprising to me that China has, you know, the amount of control over the internet that they do. They are, like I said, putting this in as a law, and they're forcing streamers to essentially police their own streams 24/7, because they don't have monitors necessarily that'll do that. But if anyone reports, you know, I guess if you were a streamer, you'd be busted for it. So it kind of puts it puts the whole system in kind of a weird state, because China's a weird state.
they should just have people in protest sneaking bananas into every video. So you've got to watch everything.
Well, I think history has told us that the internet is good for a lot of things, but it's really, really good for porn. So. And I think
you heard it here first.
I think trying to stop that in this way is maybe not a realistic solution for it. I think if
Alan, you have to remember, this is the country that built a huge wall to keep out the Mongols, and that didn't work either.
Well, I think something kind of in between. If they are going to regulate it, they should at least get in on the tax dollars for it or something. That's the American way anyway.
A McDonald's on every corner and a banana in every video game. That's how America wins.
I don't know. I guess it just goes to show there are a lot of people that will spend a lot of time watching videos on the internet. I don't know if I would spend. I certainly wouldn't spend a lot of money doing that thing. I've spent a lot of time. I've gone down the YouTube rat hole of watching every epic rap battle of history.
Oh yeah, those are good.
I'm not ashamed to have seen every bad lip reading ever, but.
All the Yildiz videos. Yes. I was watching this last time again. For not the first time.
Right. Right. I think there's certainly a lot of content that's interesting, and there's a lot of content that's weird. And I think it's mostly determined by the market and how that goes. I guess, you know, that there's that again, you know, we're coming at it from the American perspective and capitalism and all that, and China doesn't exactly do that, so it is a cultural difference, which but it's so strange and so specific what they call out about what is and isn't legal. I think they did also ban like low-cut dresses and thigh-high stockings, which again,
but you're... not those damn flower hats or whatever the headband.
Right. I think it's It's again, you're chasing a moving target for
a dragon.
I thought about it and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it because China. But anyway, but yes, there. I think it's a losing battle to kind of regulate it by banning specific things, and then eventually eventually it's just going to be, you know, really, really boring on their equivalent of YouTube. I think more likely is that regulating this will be very strange and ultimately unenforceable, and then be something that gets legislated in a much more weird and harsh way, which will probably be bad for the internet in China. But
because the internet's so great in China already.
Buy stock in VPN companies. That's all I'm trying to say. kind of moving from one weird and dark corner of the internet to a slightly different one. It's weird and dark because it's it's in Utah. but it's weird and dark because it's a virtual reality theme park called The Void. And they're launching the concept in, I believe it's at Times Square's Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, as a tie-in to the Ghostbusters movie. The theme park aspect of it is you put on a VR helmet and you wear a backpack with a computer and a battery in the backpack, so you're untethered for the most part. I mean, it's obviously tethered to the headset, but you can walk around with the headset on, and in the headset it's projecting the layout of the room. So it's a large room, but there are not exactly obstacles, but things in the room that you can actually run into or touch or climb on, that in the headset they can project things in or about. There's also talk about adding kind of heat sources, things to make it a much more immersive experience. I mean, I remember ages ago when there was like a VR center at, I think it was Pier 39 in San Francisco, at their arcade thing, and you essentially stood in this little ring. It was a slightly raised platform, and then you had to put on the very bulky, uncomfortable headset, and then you could spin around in that little space, but you couldn't walk anywhere. So this is, you know, miles ahead of that technology. But they're opening a full center in Utah, where their headquarters are. But in the they're tying it into the Ghostbusters movie release, because they're as a way to say that this is one of the things you can do. You can, instead of just having a movie with a regular theater experience, you could have a movie with a associated VR experience that you can walk around and inhabit some of the scenes from the movie, or otherwise kind of interact with it more than just having it kind of passively coming to you. And I think it's an interesting thing. I think the tie-in to movies and kind of increasing a draw for a theater experience makes a lot of sense too. Despite every kind of warning that people aren't spending any more money on movies, and yet movies are making, you know, more money every year. I don't fully understand that logic, but I do think that having more of an experience component is interesting. But kind of cycling back to the beginning of the story, I'm just bummed that it's only in Utah. How did they pick Utah?
What else are you going to do there? I mean, other than if you're going to go to one of the natural wonders that is in Utah.
Great Salt Lake.
Bryce Zion.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. I think it's It's interesting. Have you ever done any VR anything?
Nope. The closest I've gotten to VR is there used to be a game at the arcade at the boardwalk where you controlled a mech where you would walk around.
Yeah.
But you were standing in one place and really shitty.
That's the one that you held it to your face, right?
Yeah, and
you
could, totally not immersive at all.
Yes, I remember this. Yes. I I think the images that they had of it in the article are a little I don't know, it looks too laser tag for me, and I don't know if that's the experience I necessarily want. Laser tag is even a thing anymore. I think the last laser tag thing near me closed about 4 years ago. Although it's probably still at the boardwalk now that I think about it. There was one in Mountain View for a little while. I went to probably too many of a team building exercise there. It's not very team building when your goal is to kind of shoot each other. I never fully understood that. But VR theme parks are a thing. Hopefully it does well in New York, and then maybe it does well enough in Utah that they can expand it to someplace I would actually go. And then...
San Francisco. I would go there.
Yeah.
I was there this week.
So moving from the world of the virtual world, we're going to go right into Meat Space. Because we're talking about meat comms, and that's what it's called. It's some researchers at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign just came out with a system specifically for communicating through, or they tested their proof of concept by communicating through meat. I think it was actually pork, but. But I unfortunately can't remember what meat stands for in this instance. But they set up a receiver and a transmitter on either side of a hunk of pork, and then used ultrasonic signaling to send communication between between the two pads and back and forth. And it worked. It worked great. And you're wondering, why? Why are you wasting research dollars on this, University of Illinois? But what they're doing is working on signaling for medical devices, things that are implantable or swallowed or otherwise inside the body. You can only communicate to them if... they're tethered via a wire, pretty much, because the human body is full of stuff, and it tends to attenuate radio wave signals. And the radio wave signals, I think in the article it said that the theoretical limit of what you can do over radio waves through the human body and it still be safe to the human body. That's a very key distinction here. it's something like 50 kilobits per second, which if you're old like me, that's like a modem, like a telephone modem. And the ultrasonic signaling technology, does have kind of a limited range, is something like 30 megabits per second. So you're talking...
That's faster than the internet at my house.
Yeah. It's like you can stream video through it is the way that they were describing it, which is exactly what they want to do. They want to stream like camera video and then have controls for whatever might be doing any kind of work inside the body on an organ or tissues or what have you. 30 megabits is a lot of bandwidth. You can do a lot with 30 megabits of bandwidth. And that's super interesting. I think
chest cavity.
I think they could have. Well, I think they had to pick actually meat, because it wouldn't be like a fair test to do it through, like, you know, a bottle of water or something like that, because it doesn't have all the stuff in it that's that would block things. It doesn't have bones and organs and other you know, junk that's in the way.
you can send HD video through a pork loin or a beef liver, but if your house is built the wrong way, you can't get Wi-Fi two rooms away. What the fuck?
There has to be some middle ground in here. Hopefully some technology echoes back. Although the reason that it works so well is because the medium is continuous. So you could have really good signal in your house. You would just have to fill it, you know, with water. Or pork. bacon. Well, let's move from meat space into actually something that they might test on meat, or possibly not. And that's tattoos. We have two stories about tattoos this week. First, we're going to talk about a mummy that was discovered. It was 3,000 years old, and they discovered it had tattoos on it. And this isn't super new, I guess. There have been instances of bodies that were preserved that they've been able to figure out that there were tattoos on the body using infrared scanning or just being able to see the skin and see marks on it. But most of the marks that they've found, like there was a preserved human remains that was encased in ice that was, I think it was 5,000 years old, and they were able to see marks on the body, but they were kind of abstract. There were lines or dots. But what's interesting is on this 3,000-year-old mummy, which I believe was found in Egypt, the markings are distinct and actually drawn pictures, so they're representative. So they had to do a little work to figure this out, because while you're able to see some of the things on the skin directly, the mummification process does destroy a lot of the skin, and so they had to do kind of infrared scans on the skin. But then, in addition to the skin being 3,000 years old, it also degrades by stretching and otherwise falling apart. And so they had to kind of unwarp the pictures. And when they did that, they're like, oh, that's an eye and that's a cow. And these are images that are more representative of things rather than kind of abstract lines or dots. So yeah, this woman was rocking tats. It's awesome. Really interesting. They made a lot of other kind of guesses about the tattooing process, because it probably wasn't self-done, because there are tattoos on the woman's back. And in addition to that, the tattoos were, they surmised, probably extremely painful to be to be applied.
Because some on the neck as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've always thought that I would be cremated when I died, but maybe I need to go for mummification to preserve my tattoo.
Yeah, that would be
awesome. 3,000 years from now, people need to know that there's a shark smoking a cigar. A muscle-bound shark.
It's a
not
thing.
A street shark. It's not a street shark. This is the thing with tattoos. You got to really think it through.
Yeah.
I apparently did not, or underestimated the amount of people who have seen street sharks cartoon in the early 90s.
That's a pretty deep cut. I had actually forgotten about that until you'd brought it up. Street sharks, not a thing. Not a thing. It was a cartoon made to sell toys in the 90s, as many of them were. But it goes to show that you know, body art is not new, and it's probably not going away anytime soon, unless this company called Ephemeral gets a hold of the technology. So there's a company that's at TechCrunch Disrupt this week, or Disrupt New York. They have the I feel like it's much more often than annual, but maybe it's annual, but it's annual in different places, so it happens more than once a year. But TechCrunch Disrupt is where a bunch of startups kind of do a live, like, who's better than everybody else, and hopefully it's not as dramatic as it appears on TV when they show it. I'm guessing it's actually fairly boring and mundane to watch. But one of the interesting companies that was showing stuff off this week was a company dabbling in tattoo inks called Ephemeral, and their goal is to make a tattoo ink that will last about a year. And they're working on inks that, I guess the way tattoo ink works is that it's too big of a molecule in the skin that the immune system, like, won't carry it away as quickly as it would anything else that would be foreign. So what the Ephemeral guys are doing, what this company is doing, is they're making inks that are that are normally, I guess they're made in such a way that the individual components of the inks are small enough to be carried away by the body over about a year's time. But when they're initially bonded in the tattoo, they act like big molecules, so they can't be worked on. And then there's also a removal method that they have, which probably just speeds along, you know, that process of removing the tattoo. I find this amazingly interesting. I don't have any tattoos. I think I've expressed, I don't know if I've ever said it on the show, but I know that if there were a way to inkjet print, like, temporary tattoos, I would just do that all the time.
That would be like taking your hair to the next level.
I find it really interesting to have tattoos. I just don't know if I like anything that much that I'd want it forever.
Oh, at my company's holiday party, I did get a Mike Tyson tattoo on my face. That was, and at the time, permanent. But that was the bourbon talking. You don't want that for too long.
Well, especially because wasn't he sued for that? Wasn't there some copyright thing about that tattoo art? I vaguely remember.
It was the Hangover movies. The company producing those got sued.
Okay.
For using tattoo in their movie.
Right.
With Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Because it was the artist's copyright, yeah, supposedly.
Yeah, which I don't know how you can enforce that, really. It's like, do you have to wear, like, a mask over part of your face, like, all the time in order to prevent it being accidentally used commercially? I don't know.
Well, no, they weren't suing because Tyson was in the movie. They were suing because another character in the movie got the same tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fine. Copyright needs to be reformed. That's definitely a thing.
Yes.
But that's not what we're talking. We're talking about somewhat temporary, somewhat permanent tattoos. I find it really interesting. You know, you know, at least for trying out the how they work, little bit of a test run that kind of, you know, it's longer than a day. I think is interesting. I really do wish I could print, like, on demand temporary tattoos. There's probably a service to do that, and that might be enough to tide me over. we can, you know, we can always hope. It is the future. We're almost there. speaking of almost there in the future is, well, it doesn't seem almost, but the election in the United States is almost upon us. I guess relatively 6 months away is sort of almost. But for that 6 months, Budweiser is doing something sort of interesting, sort of questionable. They are, you know, in order to take advantage of the bump in sales that naturally comes with summer, and I guess trying to capitalize on the Olympics, which may still happen in Brazil if the Zika outbreak doesn't get declared, you know, a national or an international health hazard, and the president, you know, the lack of, you know, the president's being suspended for corruption doesn't impact that. We're going way off topic here. I'm sorry. But what we're talking about is there's a general swell of patriotism for, you know, summer and 4th of July and the Olympic Games and national elections. And so Budweiser is riding that wave of nationalism, and they're rebranding their the regular Budweiser cans to remove Budweiser prominently. I think it's still going to say Budweiser somewhere on the can, but all of the art is going to be replaced, and they're rebranding it as America.
I don't approve of this.
No, I
that
find
is not a thing.
I find this amazingly not a thing. I mean, I think from a from a marketing perspective, I think there's a kernel of a good idea there in terms of kind of glomming on to all of those things, but I don't know how anyone doesn't see it as just that. it's not going to make me, it might make me buy like a six pack so I can have the cans because that's sort of interesting, but I'm not going to drink
it. Open it up and pour it out.
Right. I'm not going to drink it. It's still
into your toilet because it's basically piss anyway.
And it's only the main Budweiser line. So it's, they're not going to be like America Light cans, you know, anywhere. What would that be? Like Canada? Would you call it?
Damn.
But this reminds me of a while ago. Was it Budweiser that did the American Ale thing? Like,
yes, I think so.
A few years ago, and I remember that being sort of interesting. So Budweiser is a lager, if I'm remembering right. It's their, you know, kind of like Coors and other really shitty awful beers that. That they're mass produced. They're meant to be, you know, easy drinking. So using ale yeasts makes them a little sharper, a little more alcohol forward. And they made something that they branded American Ale, and they sold it for a little while. I think it was for a summer, and I remember having it and thinking, you know, this is pretty good from Budweiser. It's pretty drinkable, but still kind of a little more complex and has, you know, something interesting to it. The problem was that they were selling it not at Budweiser prices, but at craft brew prices, which it was clearly not. So it's another questionable kind of thing from Budweiser there. I also don't want to I don't want to drink America. I think that's not a thing.
No.
Yeah, I don't want the reputation that America is kind of weak and shitty.
Are you saying that we need to make America great again, Alan?
is this all this is? Is that, you know, when November comes and after the election and then they remove the branding of of Budweiser. Will that make America great again?
Is this Budweiser endorsing Trump?
Very interesting turn of events
here. I think I will just continue not buying Budweiser.
Yeah, I think that's fine. We will move from America to a different America, a more interesting and kind of better America, I think. Captain America, the Captain America movie, Civil War, came out last weekend. So we're moving into spoiler territory, spoiler country, that is America. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Civil War. I think it was. I've always enjoyed the Captain America movies, especially out of the Marvel movies that have come around, and this is really no exception. It was really fun to watch.
It was a blast. There was a lot going on. It's not my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. No. I agree with that. I agree with that too. I think I'm still.
I have some bones to pick with this.
Okay. I still enjoy Winter Soldier most. I think.
I think Winter Soldier is probably the best Captain America movie.
Yeah. 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 I think the if there's anything, well, okay. There are a number of things wrong with it, and if I have to go kind of very deep with it, the first thing I'm going to go wrong with is that I was a big fan of the Civil War comic.
Yes.
And I think that they cherry picked interesting things from it, but
like the name?
Yes. There were more things in there than just the name, but yes, I think they turned it into a different kind of telling of it, which is fine. I mean, I think they've always maintained that the comic universe and the movie universes are distinct enough. They're not trying to tie everything back into everything else. I mean, other than tying this movie into the rest of the kind of Marvel universe, I was a little annoyed by how much of, what was it, Avengers Rise of Ultron I would have to have, like, either been caught up on or otherwise kind of guessed to figure out what's going on in this film. I wasn't a fan of the second Avengers movie. I think we talked about that a little bit when it came around, but
I think before I start covering this movie with praise, which I plan on doing in a few minutes,
yeah,
I would like to address my issues with it.
Sure, yeah,
yeah. First of all, they changed the Civil War storyline, which I can understand why they did, and I think they told an interesting story.
Yeah.
But I also really like that storyline, so seeing it change like that did kind of bother me.
Yeah.
But that's I can throw that away. That's not a real criticism. Structurally, I had issues with it.
Okay.
It felt like a bunch of scenes put together. Like, it didn't feel like there was no through line. I don't know. The story felt really slapped together.
There is a bit of meandering. I think it introduces.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, it introduces too many threads to track at the very beginning, and I think that's because it is really more of an like kind of Avengers movie than I think the second Avengers movie was. In that it told the stories that it told better than I think it did for Avengers. I honestly think the best. Not the best, but maybe one of the nicest scenes in Avengers is when you go follow Hawkeye and his family for like why are we here? Oh, this is actually nice. This is kind of refreshing versus what we were seeing with everything else. Whereas, you know, the other stories just seem like grafted on. I think you're right in that there's too many stories at the beginning. I think it does coalesce a little bit, although there's still too much going on. By the time you get to the airfield it's just like, okay, everybody's here and we kind of have a reason for everyone to be here, but it's not super clear. But
well, I think part of why the Civil War storyline worked in the comics was because it had decades of comic lore to build, like, already in place.
Yeah.
Like, okay, here's all the pieces. Now we can do this crazy thing with everybody.
Right.
And they haven't built out the roster enough mm-hmm. in the Marvel movies to make Civil War really feel like that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And so I think trying to rush in other characters and make them bigger, I think it hindered the movie. Like, if they had made Civil War after Infinity War, when it's going to be, you know, all the heroes fighting Thanos.
Yeah.
That might make more sense. But and the thing is, like, I really liked Black Panther. I'm excited about the Black Panther movie. I mm-hmm. really like Spider-Man. I think the next Spider-Man movie could actually be good. I think trying to force both those characters in with any meaningful role, it just made it jumbled a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think it does suffer from the, like, let's just cram more things into it kind of issue that I've, you know, I had.
It was a bunch of really cool scenes.
Yeah.
But as a movie, like, I don't know. I feel like it had too much going on, not enough connected, not enough mm-hmm. of a driving story.
Yeah.
My other issue with it, this whole movie, the whole conflict of the movie could have been avoided if they'd taken like 20 minutes to like do any sort of investigating or talking to each other. And then there's no fucking movie.
Yes. Yes. It does suffer from the, from what I usually see this in romantic comedies is that the kind of the primary conflict in the movie would go away if the two people just like use their words.
If they had a good relationship.
Yeah. So yes, I do agree that there's a little bit of an issue there.
I mean, those are pretty much my only issues with it. I really liked Black Panther. I thought he was a great character. I thought the actor was good. It looked cool. I think this might be the best Spider-Man we've seen yet. He was fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really just reminded me of like the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
But better.
Yes. Yes. Better. Not as like he's super duper powerful yet. He's still kind of like humble enough. And they took more of the cue from, I think, the Deadpool movie where, you know, just don't have him do stuff. He has to be talking the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think that worked. I think there's, the thing that I like about the Captain America movies is that the tone is just better. I think the tone for a lot of the Marvel movies were just, oh, it's just so dark and so heavy. You know, it's that's leaking over from, you know, the Batman and Superman kind of side of things, unfortunately. And I'm a little concerned that the new X-Men movie is going to be in that kind of, you know, tone as well. You know, it can't all be Deadpool and Guardians of the Galaxy, but I would like the tone to be kind of, you know, a little lighter. And it was. I think, you know, having Ant-Man in there was nice.
Ant-Man was great. And they showed the two things that some friends and I wanted to see in this movie going into it were we want to see Ant-Man go big.
Yeah.
And you want to see Ant-Man on the Hawkeye arrow. And we got both of those things.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I was pleased by the movie in general. I think the like anything, there's going to be, you know, nitpicks. I think if it the nice thing about it is that the Captain America stories are still really just about Captain America and Bucky. You know, they're really kind of centered on that. And even if there are other things going on in the rest of the universe, like they didn't, as far as I could tell, toss to anything that's going to lead into Infinity War or anything like that. So which I'm fine with. I think having kind of separated storylines is good. Not everything has to tie into everything else. So that's nice. Do you think, given that Sony kind of released the grip on Spider-Man, that maybe they'll kind of resolve the X-Men thing eventually?
I don't know if Fox will be as reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they keep making shitty movies like Fantastic Four, which I that's not fair of me to say. I didn't even see it. But that'll tell you something. I love comic book movies. I didn't see that shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully there's still hope in the movie watching future. All I know is that summer movies seem to start earlier every year. I'm happy for to get back into that. There'll be a lot more kind of spoiler alerts coming soon for these episodes as we go, as on our
I actually don't know that Marvel at this point wants the X-Men as much, because they've really been investing in the Inhumans on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they're getting to do all the cool mutant stuff without calling them mutants.
Yeah. Well, they can't call them mutants. That's
I know. No, they're aliens.
They're enhanced. Enhanced,
they're enhanced aliens, yes. From the Kree.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully that will get resolved. I mean, there's James Bond got Spectre back, so maybe. There's hope yet. With you know, time heals all wounds or invalidates all copyrights, one or the other. Well, that looks like it's enough talking for this week. I want to put the call out again. If anyone would like to join us for these heart-to-heart moments about the Marvel Cinematic Universe or otherwise talk about
join us in episode 187.
Please do. We would love to have you on if you'd help us figure out how to make the theme work on that show. But do tweet at us, Facebook us, go to the website and talk to the HAL 900, and otherwise get the word out. The Not a Thing podcast is recording weekly. Feel free to join us or support us. Hashtag reptilian overlords. And Brendan, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.